every morning, Arabile Gumede and Nastasia Aronsa on Classic Business. Breakfast with MoneyWeb.
Well, President Cyril Ramaphosa has been on the investment offensive, of course, working hard to improve South Africa's economic situation. We saw him go to the Saudis and the Middle East, a while ago now, as he tried to garner up support for his $100 billion investment dream. And he then hosted the Job Summit. He also then expected to produce 275,000 new jobs a year. More recently, obviously, organized the Investment Summit, at which participants announced commitments worth 290 billion rand. He also announced initiatives to promote the construction of infrastructure, reform the tax regime. He also had just before the BRICS summit, China looking to invest a whole hoard of money into South Africa. But will any of this be of benefit to poor South Africans? That becomes the key element here, because otherwise we do begin to fear a few issues. Danny Bradlow, he's Professor for International Development, Developmental Law and African Economic Relations at the University of Pretoria, joins us now on the line to perhaps unpack some of those fears. Danny, appreciate your time this morning, Professor. Shall we unpack exactly how, if this doesn't benefit the poor, how big an impact it'll actually have?
Yes, good morning, and good morning to the listeners. Well, I think that the issue is, how do we assess whether it's going to impact the poor or not, and in a way or not? And as we know, the structure of the South African economy excludes many people, which is one of the reasons why poverty and inequality has not decreased since 1994. And so there's a real debate, a real concern that if we continue with business as usual, this still won't benefit or reduce poverty and inequality. And so I think the only way you can really answer that question is to do impact assessments before you do undertake policy initiatives to assess, are you actually doing something which will maximize the positive benefits on questions like poverty and inequality? And I think in answering that question, the Constitution is a good place to start, because that spells out the rights of government and the rights of citizens.
Yeah. Do you think then the sustainability of this, I mean, the drive of this investment is clearly very necessary, but are we then plugging it perhaps in the right holes, or are we just perhaps saying we want all this money and putting it forward and it looks a whole lot more exciting, but isn't necessarily being put in the right areas to create developmental growth right from the bottom up? And are we just trickling this money from the top down?
Right. I mean, it's easy to get seduced by the large numbers, which are impressive. And as you say, we need investment. Mm. So there's no debate that that's a necessary push. But is it the right kind of investment? And is it going to have the right kinds of impact? And, you know, there's a range of things. We can't say you must put all the money into dealing directly with poverty and making sure that the poor benefit, because we have to, the economy has to grow, and that requires certain infrastructure, giving business some benefits so that they have incentives to invest is important, because if that doesn't happen, there won't be jobs. But there also needs to be care taken to make sure that it's being done in a way that has as positive an impact as possible over on progressively transforming the economy and delivering on the rights that people are promised in the Constitution.
Yeah, I suppose it's going to be an absolutely to try and mitigate, though, to try and continue the whole process. It's really a rock and a hard place, though, isn't it? Because you want to get the process right, but getting it right means that you kind of have to forego one thing and perhaps, you know, push on with another.
That's absolutely true. There's no question it's a very hard choice. Probably it's a given that we'll get some choices wrong and some right. But the part of the reason for doing impact and for understanding what we expect the benefits to be is it makes more transparent the process and allows people to assess, is the government and the private sector doing everything that they can? You know, is this the tough reality and we need to be patient that things will be delivered, but it's going to take time? And that will, you know, there'll be a debate because obviously we won't all agree. But at least we know that the issues are being given adequate attention and that they can be debated on their merits.
Yeah, Professor, I think it's one of those where you know the solutions themselves are definitely there, as you say, and certainly as you said, we get a few wrong, we'll try and get a few right, but because we're now making inroads, we are pushing forward with trying to curb things like corruption, curb maladministration, curbing fraud. That certainly puts us in good stead then to be able to say, okay, yes, we may get the decisions wrong, but there is a greater good we're fighting for, and it sort of aims in that direction, and we help mitigate some of the risks and the fallacies that we perhaps get.
Absolutely. I mean, dealing with corruption, fraud, all of that is absolutely important, and there's definitely movement in that direction. But, you know, the government needs to make sure that each step it's doing, it's taking every effort to deliver as much as it possibly can. I'm confident that our people understand that everything can't be done now, but it's not unreasonable for people to expect government to show that it is making every effort, that it understands what people's needs are, and that it is making sure that what it does do will move things in the right direction and not just keep doing business as usual, basically.
How do we measure any form of success or the impact that we may certainly have with these investments?
Right. I mean, it's very difficult, and obviously people will differ on what counts as a success, but I think if we do proper impact assessment, so we assess how will, for example, on the jobs issue, who will get the jobs, where will the jobs be, what kinds of jobs will they be, will they be temporary jobs, or will they actually be permanent jobs? Is there a strategy for how, if they're temporary jobs, there'll be a follow-up for that? How will the communities where the jobs are going to be created get spillover benefits from that? Things like that. That gives us a sense of how the economy is beginning to be changed to help people. Because the legacy of apartheid includes also spatial apartheid in cities, which hasn't really been changed since 1994. And if you're doing all this investment and creating all these jobs, is it being used in a way that brings jobs closer to where people live, that integrates different parts of cities together, that integrates rural areas into the South African economy, things like that?
Yeah. Professor Danny Bradlow, appreciate your time there, Professor for International Developmental Law and African Economic Relations at the University of Pretoria. Setting the stage there, South Africa set on fixing its economy, but will the poor benefit? 7:30, your news headlines.